We were a middle-class family. My father was a leather merchant, and we lived in a comfortable flat on the second floor of the building where we had our store. I personally found my first experiences of anti-Semitism on the sporting field, where we were strong supporters of the Jewish First Division soccer club, Hakoa, and where there were fights every week, both on and off the field. In fact, crowds of hooligans were just waiting outside to beat us up when two of my uncles were arrested. My father decided it was time to go, and we moved in a clandestine way to Belgium, which was the nearest country to Germany, Austria, where we could get in without too much difficulties. Then, of course, things changed, unfortunately, on the 10th of April 1940, when Germany invaded Belgium. Everything changed. My father was asked to present himself at a barrack to be interned, was promptly deported to the south of France, which was unoccupied at the time, put into an internment camp. It wasn't a concentration camp. He foresaw what his fate would be. Tried to escape to Switzerland, was arrested by the French police, was handed over to the Germans, the Nazis, in occupied France, and we found his name on a list of transport number 42, leaving the internment camp of the Drancy near Paris for the extermination camp of Auschwitz, where he was killed shortly after arrival. We, of course, did not know this. We were back in Brussels. We lived in Brussels over the years of the occupation.
How long did it take you before you found out your father's fate?
Not until after the war. 2 years after the war, possibly these were the most difficult years for my mother, because we were still hoping, against hope, that he would return. But he didn't. And, of course, life became extremely tenuous when the first poor survivors from the camps came back to Brussels in their horrible, horrible striped uniforms, camp uniforms. And the general horror of what had happened in those camps became common knowledge.
So you remained in Europe during the war while Jewish people perished in their millions. How did you survive and the rest of your family?
We had false papers, and we continued with the things that we were doing. Myself could not go to school as a boy. I could not go to school anymore. I became apprentice to a photographer. But I must say that I was a teenager, and as a teenager, nothing can happen to me. I mean, I took such risks walking through the streets, of course, with my false papers as a Belgian. I took risks which my mother never found out about. I was lucky insofar that I spoke French perfectly. At the time, the goon cars were driving through the streets of Brussels, stopping people, asking them questions, looking at their passport, their papers, identity papers. If you were a woman and spoke good French, you could escape. If you were a man, you didn't have the luxury. Jewish men are circumcised. And many, many is the time I saw one of those unfortunate ones with the trousers around their ankles being examined. And if they were circumcised, they were never seen of again. They were gone.
I'm speaking to Herbert Leder. He is one of the speakers at the Courage to Care educational program and exhibition at La Trobe University in Shepparton. And Herbert, you touched on this earlier, but the recounting of your experiences was a pretty hard and harrowing thing to do.
Yes, it was difficult. It was difficult insofar that it was reminding me of the things that happened. And but they had to be told, because it is a long time ago. And I'm now 85, and it's probably the last year or two that I'll be able to continue this program. And from now on, I guess it's only children of survivors who'll be able to tell their story.
What sort of reaction do you get from the students when you tell your story?
as somebody mentioned to me before, you could hear a pin drop when I'm talking. In general, the kids do not know what happened. And again, because it happened so long ago, and it's such a long way away, there are certain, when we look through the panels here, there are certain things that are impressive and that remind us of the things that happened and what people did with plain courage because they felt that they had to. Another friend of ours who is also a survivor went back, it was in Hungary, and asked the people who saved him, how could you do this? You put your family in risk. And the answer was, is regularly, we just had to do it. There was no question. It had to be done, and we did it.
Do you worry that as time goes on and we have fewer and fewer Holocaust survivors, that the dreadful lessons that were learnt during that period of time could be forgotten and then the whole thing possibly repeated?
Repeated, not to the same extent. Yeah. Australia is such a wonderful country, and I personally do not believe that anything like this could happen. But people have to be reminded of what happened in the lifetime of those people that are still alive.
What makes you happy?
To see my family growing up, to see them successful. They're all professionals. They're university professors, they're lawyers, they're doctors. It's a large family. Once a week we all get together. And it's a wonderful family life. A quiet, happy family life. And everybody gets on well, and there are no family quarrels. That's what makes me happy.
Well, it's been a privilege to talk to you, Herbert, and thank you for sharing your story with me today.
Thank you very much.